and we welcome you to another adventure in political, historical, and oftentimes controversial, and anything with myself, wise guy, wise crack, infested talk. And we call this show, yes, we call it a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor who is giggling in the background. It's Dr. Ronald L. Fineman from Boca Raton in the Sunshine State of Florida. We will talk about current events, politics, the election, the people throwing themselves, throwing their hats in the ring, du jour, because every day it seems like a new person either says he or she is going to run or maybe is not going to run, and anything else we can find as a point to ponder. So, Ron, how are you doing on this fine Monday morning?
I'm doing well. I'm doing fine. Thank you so much. I hope you're doing well, too.
Well, that's glad to hear. Doing quite smashing myself, and glad to hear from you. Talk about, again, political events in the world around us, history, presidential history, as I've anointed Dr. Fineman, the official presidentologist of this station and just about anywhere else. yesterday, Ron, we started daylight savings time. Except in some places, our neighboring state of Indiana, also state bringing us two recent vice presidents, including the current one. At one time, most of the state didn't celebrate daylight savings time, but they started doing it several years ago. Parts of the state, areas near Evansville and the Chicago suburbs, are in central time. So Indiana's kind of eclectic with time. Here in Ohio, it's a lot easier. It's Eastern Standard Time and then Eastern Daylight Time when it's not Eastern Standard Time. As you know, Ron, I'm hardly a fan of the president who preceded Mr. Trump. However, one very good thing that I feel occurred during his administration, as you know, if something occurs during an administration, I give the president at least indirect credit. As I say, I give Trump indirect credit for the low to stable prices of gas, the overall good economy, as I feel as a leader of the free world, he has at least a partial hand in it. And so certainly in all fairness, I will give similar credit to past administrations. And I do believe Obama had a lot to do with the extension of daylight savings time, which is kind of what I'm getting at. I'm a night owl, as you probably know, as a lot of computer people are. And I like the idea that daylight savings time now starts at the beginning of March and goes to the beginning of November. So hats off to Mr. Obama for having, I believe, more than half a hand in that change in policy. And in case, listener, if you forgot to set your clocks forward, you may not realize that it's now about quarter after 10 instead of quarter after 9. And sometimes that occurs. You get a little bit of that jet lag as the clocks change. Ron, what do you think about daylight savings time? Do you agree with me that it's a good idea to start it earlier, end it later, maybe keep it the whole year? Are you a daylight savings time person, or did you kind of like it a couple generations ago when it didn't last as long as it does now?
I actually like daylight savings time, and Marco Rubio, our senator in Florida, one of the two senators, and also the former governor who's the other senator now, Rick Scott, promoted the idea of having around-the-clock daylight savings all around. And I think there's a good argument for that. I really think there is. But whether that will actually happen, not to keep on changing the clock every November and every March, but I don't know what's going to happen with that. But they both have promoted it.
Well, that's good. So you're not afraid to admit that a person you don't like, which would be Little Marco, as Donald calls him, because, you know, Donald has nicknames for about everybody. I hate to ask what he would call me, but I bet it would be kind of funny. So anyway,
well,
Little Marco.
Scott, I actually dislike Rick Scott more than Marco Rubio. If I had to vote between them, I'd vote for Marco.
Yeah, I call, of course, I call him Little Marco with big ears. It's like his ears are half the size of his head. So, but you said he does
and
support.
He's only 5'6", I understand. And there were jokes made on Saturday night at a comedy show that I went to about Marco being being a munchkin. Somebody, you know, the comedian said it was very funny. Bobby Collins in Coral Springs said he's a munchkin.
But Munchkin is the Secretary of the Treasury, right? Stephen Munchkin or Mnuchin?
with his name, yes, that's
yeah,
true.
But the real Munchkin is little Marco. So, you know, it's okay. Never take yourself too seriously. I don't mind if Donald killed if he had a pet.
Donald Trump doesn't like SNL making fun of him. That's the problem. He wants to censor it.
Kind of like to ask Donald if he'd have a pet name for me. I mean, he'd be so intrigued by my eclectic politics, sitting here giving him an A on his general feelings and accomplishments toward illegal immigration and border control, but giving him an F on a bunch of other things and just saying that in general he's kind of a buffoon, but he is amusing. So you just really, really don't know. I guess if I ever get a chance to meet Donald, I think I'll ask him, and I would treasure any nickname that he might bestow upon me. So, and as we've talked about, Ron, I guess you agree at least partially that any accomplishment, change in the way things happen day to day in this country, we give at least indirect credit to the president in charge. And that was a case with Obama. He didn't single-handedly say, we're going to make daylight savings time longer, but he certainly had an influence.
You're correct.
For the record, another policy change that I'm very much in favor of, in fact, I think it's too lenient, but it's a good start, that happened under Obama is the 10% tax on tanning beds. As tanning beds are extremely dangerous, I believe they're more dangerous than smoking, and tax them because people are going to use them just like people are going to smoke or do other things that aren't good for you. You might as well make tax dollars out of it. So I'd say 100%, but 10% is a good start, and I applaud Obama for that. Sometimes it's those little policy changes that I think are important, and taking the initiative to do that is a good thing. So I give credit where credit is due, and I get aggravated and sometimes bash where those kind of reactions might be due. So,
well, for instance, Obama promoting an open internet, now the opposite has been promoted. So that's something else you agree with Obama on. I know
without question, I do commend him for that policy. You think it shouldn't be necessary. I mean, I agree that it shouldn't be necessary to just slap regulations on everybody, but I don't trust telecom companies. As I say, I would trust 10 used car dealers before I trusted half of a telecom company. And these guys do need to be regulated. And it's a case where it was necessary. And I don't understand why, but Donald Trump doesn't seem to understand it. And that is one of the three or four things about Donald Trump that I give him an F on, which is a shame. You know,
Republicans don't like regulation historically. Since the time after Theodore Roosevelt's Democrats that always want regulation. And, of course, some of them are now being called socialists, so they go too far. And I think that's an extreme statement. But, I mean, there's a need for regulation, but not government ownership, obviously. Yeah. It's not socialism in a pure sense, but certainly regulation is needed.
As I see, socialism is more if you denote yourself as a socialist, and we have Bernie and AOC saying that they're democratic socialist. To me, it's the same thing, socialist, democratic socialist. I don't make a differentiation. Policies, though, the United States, like every country, has some policies that may be considered socialist, but it doesn't mean we have a socialist mentality or socialist government. That's kind of the differentiation that I make.
That's what I've written about on my blog, too, yes, the differentiation.
But yeah. I will say that this will be a bone of contention and something to argue about, and just makes things a lot more interesting. I guess I can kind of say that. So anyway, things that happened during
Elizabeth Warren wanting to break up the big tech companies. What do you think about that?
Well, that's an interesting one, and I look at it versus the breakup of AT&T. Now, there's a difference. For one thing, AT&T, you know, that happened back in the early 80s, our younger listeners, but of course, Ron and I remember, since we're older, but still fabulouser.
Yes.
Is that a word, fabulous? Well, we are fabulouser, whether or not that's actually a word. So, a couple of things. AT&T is a public utility. Now, I had stock in AT&T. My parents bought it for me when I was born, and remember that I got like one stock in each of the seven they called Baby Bells, and 9X being, I believe, the one that would service New York City. And then Ameritech and the other ones that it was broken up into. And ironically, AT&T, as you know, Ron, is now a much bigger company than it was prior to the breakup. Now, at the time of the breakup, I mean, there was the internet, but not in the form that it is now. There were cell phones, but again, not like there are now. And so the world is different. Technology is different, but I really think that breakup may have made AT&T bigger. It's like it unmerged. I don't know. I don't know enough about economics to say, but it just didn't seem like it went like it should have. And so would that happen with a breakup of Amazon or Facebook or Google or some other tremendous zillion-dollar tech company? Who knows? I kind of think that it might. Now, we've had tech companies, Ron, that have done some of their own modifications. You know, we had eBay and PayPal. They kind of got together, and now they're separate, although there are, I believe, there's commonality in the ownership and other things related to how they are run. We've had Google kind of form their parent company, Alphabet. It's a complicated thing. I do think there's too much Amazon bashing. I understand that Jeff Bezos, at a relatively young age, is filthy rich, but he built the company, and I commend him for that. He's a smart man, yes. Like Zuckerberg, right place at the right time, but as you know, part of your fate is luck. There are many things that are in the equation. Whether or not Amazon treats its employees well, I don't know personally. I don't work there. I do know they have people that work for them in Ohio, as well as, of course, delivery partners. And just like with Walmart, where some people say it's not a good place to work, Ron and I have talked about that. Well, you can always get a job somewhere else. It is America, and you are free to look in the want ads or start your own business. It's not quite that simple. So my main thing is I'm not quite sure, but in terms of a breakup, I would lean toward not doing it. But I would think we need a little more research first. And as you know, Warren, despite being far left, I do have some respect for her. I kind of like the fact that she's a loudmouth, even if she says things that are stupid, like the Pocahontas disaster. I feel that she is knowledgeable and experienced enough that I will heed anything that she has to say, but doesn't mean I may agree with it, nor does it mean that I might change my opinion of her drastically because I might not agree. So that's my perspective. But as we've talked about,
well,
Ron,
actually, I agree with you because I think Warren makes some good points, but sometimes she's a little too shrill and a little bit loudmouth. And again, there are men like that, but when a woman does it, I think it harms her. And I think that's one of the reasons why she's probably is not going to win in New Hampshire. There's already indications she's not, at least early polling, that when the New Hampshire primary comes up, she will not win it. And of course, Bernie's from New England also, Vermont. So it's going to be interesting to see if someone else other than them can win the New Hampshire primary, which is a crucial primary to win.
Right. Yeah. Before we end up spending the whole show on this, Ron, because there are other topics, but I do think this is important, including a next topic, which is also a little lighter and a bit more humorous, but that's all part of the fun. You and I remember the AT&T breakup. Do you think that, I know things have changed, and now we have AT&T merging with Time Warner. There's a lot in the equation. Do you think, Ron, as I would tend to, that the AT&T breakup kind of bit and ended up biting the United States in the, I guess you can say, rear end? And obviously AT&T is a much bigger company, and can we use that as a model for other antitrust suits and other forced breakups, or are we comparing apples to oranges if we talk about breaking up Amazon versus AT&T? I know you're not an economist, but you have an opinion. What do you think about that?
I'm not really, as you said, an economist. I tend to think there is a need to not have such massive corporations, but I agree AT&T, the way it worked out, it did not work the way people thought. But I do think those big companies have become abusive, even in privacy rights, in what they take away your privacy and they spread your information. I think that bothers me more than anything else.
Right, but they all do it, including Facebook that you and I use every day. And,
yes.
And the NSA, which came to light during the Obama administration, and, you know, I say, as I tell my clients, if you don't want to be spied on, if you don't want your information being shared by a computer seemingly every minute, live in a cave somewhere and turn off your smartphone. There's no way around it. I have resigned to the fact that it's going to happen, and I know it's unfortunate, but it's part of the way things are. And
there is no privacy left in this world, it seems. That's right.
It would certainly appear that way. Now, here's one point to ponder, Ron. The AT&T breakup took place during the Ronald Wilson Reagan administration. Would that be correct?
Actually, it started under Carter, but it continued under Reagan. I think in 1979 it started,
right,
if I remember correctly.
Right.
Carter was actually quite not that, you know, he was surprising in some ways. You know, he had his ups and his downs, but he did believe in deregulation. So, so it's interesting that he was involved in that too. Yes.
Yeah, Carter was kind of a moderate Democrat. He certainly wasn't a Sanders type, and maybe more like Biden in terms of policy.
Carter had
more charisma. Biden, as we've talked about last week, his charisma has improved, but it's not really his strong point. Carter, with that country boy, you know, my mom, you know, she didn't like Carter. I remember when he won the election, and she said, "President Carter." That just sounds as I said, my mom thought anybody with a Southern accent was a hick, and that's kind of ridiculous. as we've talked about,
I'm as a New York accent. How do we get used to this guy?
I mean,
Griffin Bell. I couldn't understand a word he said.
It was kind of funny. I don't think she really meant it because she was a wisecracker, kind of like myself. But it's like, well, ironically, as Ron and I have talked about, of our lifetime, the two most intelligent presidents were Southerners with a Southern accent, Carter and Clinton. I mean, there are smart people and dumb people in all parts of the country, and I guess there's the irony for you. So who knows?
And the longer Carter lives, the better he looks. Not that he's perfect, but I have more respect for him each year that goes by, more than I did when he was in the White House. And that's why he's considered the greatest former president since John Quincy Adams, as far as his activism. And by the way, today's the 11th. 11 days from now, he passes H.W. Bush as the oldest president in American history.
Well, that should be an interesting topic, I'm sure we'll address on a future show. So we agree, Ron, that the AT&T breakup has kind of come back to bite the United States in the rear end, and who knows what may have transpired if it would not have occurred. And is there a lesson to be learned from that if we look? Because, again, Warren, she's in her 70s. She was middle-aged when that took place 35
years ago.
Well, she'll
be 71 in 2020. She's actually 69 now.
Okay.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Okay. I guess I thought she was 79. Okay, well, maybe she looks 79.
Will be by the election, but not now.
Yeah, maybe she looks 79, because you kind of look at these people, and, you know, Sanders is, what, 78? He looks 178.
Sanders will be 79. I'm talking about in 2020, not now. He'll be 79 when the election takes place, and Biden will be 78, and Warren will be 71.
Yeah, and Biden, to me, he looks like he's in really good shape. He doesn't look that old. The white hair, you can have white hair when you're 30. I mean, I don't see that as a big deal. I would say Biden looks better than Sanders. He certainly...
Well, I think Sanders looks willy-eyed, almost like you said. He looks radical, I guess you'd say. I don't think Biden does. Biden is definitely the consummate moderate. Sanders is not.
Yeah, but I guess, Warren. But anyway, she was middle-aged when the AT&T breakup took place. And as I said, I may find her far to the left. And, you know, I like the fact she's a loudmouth. I don't even mind the Pocahontas thing. We all say stupid things. Trump certainly does. I certainly do. And we all know about Dan Quayle and the potato fiasco and everything else that came out of his mouth. And Biden with the telling the gentleman using a wheelchair to stand up, that was made pretty famous.
Yes.
So we all say stupid things. I don't really mind. I don't really mind Warren, because I don't think she takes herself too seriously. And she's a very smart woman. So
she's very intelligent.
I can, as I said,
scares a lot of people, though, because a lot of people don't like an intelligent woman. Yeah. That's why Hillary was an intelligent woman in a different manner. But I think that also upset a lot of people.
Well,
many people have said that Bill Clinton, even with what happened with him, had been eligible to run. He could have beaten Trump in 2016, while his wife, although she won the popular vote, couldn't. I have a feeling that's true. That intelligent woman scares people. I really think it does.
Yeah, it's a shame, but that's kind of how our world is, and we move on, I guess. But
yeah,
as I said, I can excuse Warren's, some of her beliefs, which are certainly far to the left of mine, and I don't mind her loud mouth, as I kind of find her amusing, and I think we need a little bit more humor in the world. But I'm sure she's considered the AT&T issue, again, being middle-aged when it took place. I was in college. And she's thinking, well, there are parallels, but in some ways we're not really comparing two things that are similar. But bottom line is, I think if Amazon is forced to break up, it's not going to happen tomorrow, and I'm not sure it's going to happen at all. And as I said, Jeff Bezos, what he lacks in hair, he certainly makes up for in his wallet. And I certainly envy his soon-to-be ex-wife, because she'll be getting probably the largest spousal support payments in history. And
$70 billion, probably the wealthiest woman in the world.
So
amazing.
That's that's how it is, and we shall proceed. So, Ron, you're on with me almost every Monday, and you've been on with the interviewer to the stars, Mr. Scott Spears, a few times, and you will again be interviewed by Scott this Tuesday after the 1 p.m. features.
That's correct. I'm looking forward to it.
Before we preview that, I wanted to go through a very pressing matter related to your relationship with Mr. Spears. And you might ask, well, what am I getting at? Well, what I'm getting at is last week, Ron, I don't know if you listen to the station as often as I do. I know you do listen, but you do your professoring and other fun things. So Last week, Ron, and this gets into Trump also, he had on a very interesting female scientist, Dr. Virginia Burkett. And she is one of the head honchos over at the U.S. Geological Survey, and she is an expert on climate change. And she was talking to Scott about climate change. Is it real? Is it not? What is the proof? What do we do? What's going to happen in 20 years? And really cool stuff. And of course, politically, Donald Trump doesn't believe in climate change. And I will append that by saying a lot of very smart people don't. It isn't just because Donald Trump doesn't quite have the science education that I do. Understand that it's a lot of smart people don't believe in it. But I, as a somewhat smart person with an advanced education and degrees in science, I believe in it, as I think most people do. And Ron, you, although you're a humanities person, you agree with the general concept of climate change, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Right. So when Dr. Burkett was on, they talked about it. And if you look on our website in the blog section, because I'm the webmaster, I have posted two articles that she recommends users read about climate change, and I encourage that folks do that. I was very impressed with that interview, and I listened to it intently. And then the next hour, I decided to call Scott, because I sometimes call the show, and I congratulated Scott on having another outstanding guest. No, not a world-famous celebrity like Ed Asner. Of course, he's on often, too, but a smart scientist who gave excellent perspectives, talked about things that I didn't even know about. So what am I getting at, Ron? You probably can figure it out because you're pretty smart. When Dr. Burkett was on with Scott, Ron, he called her Virginia. In fact, I wasn't even sure what degree she had until I looked her up, and there's a lot of stuff about her on the internet, as you might expect. Scientists, you know, they're rock stars, just like other types of celebrities are. And so,
yes. She
has the same degree you do. She has a PhD, and she
but
is obviously
science.
Right, and
yeah.
But it's the same degree, regardless of what the field might be. And as I said, when I called Scott, in addition to talking about her and mentioning about Donald Trump and climate change, and we also have a new weather reporter, Zach Fuller, with us. He is proprietor of a weather service here in Marion, Weather 43302, and Zach and I talked about climate change last week, and it is Tornado Safety Week this week. Zach's going to be talking about that at the top of every hour. So weather is all around us, especially in the Midwest, where we have four seasons. Sometimes it seems like we have four seasons in 1 week, but we do have a variable climate for sure. Bottom line is, Ron, I told Scott, well, I was reading about Virginia Burkett, and I noticed she has a PhD, the same degree that regular guest of this station has on, Dr. Ron Feynman. And so my question is, why did you call her Virginia? In fact, didn't even mention that she has a PhD. And why do you call Ron Feynman, who is, I would think, I consider you a friend, and I think Scott considers you a friend.
Yes.
You're on with us on the station a lot. Why do you call him Dr. Feynman? And so, you know, Ron, you and I have kind of pondered that and kind of wondered.
I didn't hear this book. So what was his response?
Right. The main reason was that he wanted to differentiate you from, and I agree with this, although to me, the fact that we're friends is just, it overtakes that, but I do agree with what he was saying. He wanted to differentiate the fact that he has a lot of political commentators on, including a mutual friend of ours, Mike Essen, last week, who is a smart man and a good commentator. Doesn't matter if we don't really agree with him. We respect him as a commentator. We respect him as a smart man, but he doesn't have a PhD, and so we call him Mike. And he's had other political commentators on, newsmen, Sam Donaldson, et cetera. He's been on a few times. Hugh Downs, a native Ohioan, he's been on. And other people.
Hugh Downs must be in his mid-90s, isn't
right.
he?
Yeah. Eleanor Clift, a woman we both respect. And
yes, she's wonderful, Eleanor
right.
Clift, yeah.
But you're the one who has the PhD, the only one, as far as I know. I don't think he's had on Rachel Maddow, who's... A lot of people don't know that, but she has a PhD, just like Chelsea
yes.
Clinton. I don't think Dr. Maddow or Dr. Clinton have been on, and I'd be intrigued to see what he would call them. So I guess we can table that. But you're the only one, Ron, who has a PhD, so he calls you Dr. Feynman, not because he doesn't think of you as a friend or that he thinks you would mind. He calls you that to differentiate you from the others, which is, I think, a compliment, that you are the one with a PhD, even though he has Eleanor Clift, who's very well known, Sam Donaldson, etc. You are the most educated one, so he makes sure to address you in a way that our listeners know you have all that education. And that's why... that's why he calls you Dr. Feynman.
Well, I appreciate that. I hadn't known about this before. But honestly, these other people you mentioned still are highly educated. Everything is not just a particular degree. It's the way you live your life and what you write and what you speak and what you add to the discussion. So I think they're all very educated people. And just having a doctorate is not alone how you judge education.
Right. But in case anybody has ever wondered why we use that nomenclature, that's the reason why. And so that pressing question, Ron, which I know you and I have talked about when we talk about lighter topics, the answer has been provided. And I think it's kind of an epiphany that we have gone through that. And I find it to be quite intriguing. With me, it's like I'm casual in general. But as I've noted, and as Ron knows, the shows that I have with Ron are more... they're more off the cuff. We don't rehearse. We just go and talk for 45 minutes.
No, it's more fun this way. We just
right.
come up with whatever comes out.
Yeah, you know? We're more like two friends over a cup of coffee just shooting the breeze. And we sometimes
yes.
agree, sometimes we don't. And sometimes it's just history topics where there's not really a pro or con on either side. Scott is more formal, more traditional. And that's the reason. My question is, if he were to get Rachel Maddow on, and knowing Scott, I wouldn't be surprised if he did, would he call her Dr. Maddow, or would he call her Rachel? And I guess that would be a... that
I
would be
think a, he would call her doctor, don't you think?
I
or
think he would call
that?
Her Rachel, and the reason is that her...
Because
no, yeah,
woman?
I'm not
you
discounting.
That's what you're getting at?
I'm not discounting her intelligence or education. She's not known as the history... she's not a history professor. She's a news reporter and...
she's
and
not a professor. That's
news
true,
anchor.
Yeah.
I mean, she could
she's
be.
A,
she could be.
Commentator, yes.
Right. And so because I think it's because of her occupation. And... I guess, ironically, yes, Dr. Virginia Burkett's occupation is related to her degree. But
she doesn't teach in a university, does she?
I don't believe so. She works for the Geological Survey. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure she does lectures, et cetera, but not
the government.
Right, not not a professor as her main day job. But
yes.
The other thing, too, is, again, being somewhat educated in science, as you know, Ron, pretty much anybody who is a scientist has at least a master's or in many cases has a
Absolutely,
PhD.
Like you do, yes.
And so you kind of expect that. Doesn't mean that the person isn't still a doctor, but it's more expected, whereas people that are historians, authors, historical or political commentators like yourself, they don't usually have PhDs. And that doesn't mean that they aren't smart, that they aren't good reporters. Mike Essen, for example, it doesn't matter if we don't agree with what he says sometimes. He's an excellent commentator, as we know. And he was on last week, and he has less education. Doesn't mean he's by any means not as knowledgeable.
Formal education, you mean, yeah, but
right.
he's still very knowledgeable.
Right,
yeah,
so the formal...
Eleanor Clifton, all of them are wonderful.
Right, so his... so, Ron, his designation of you is the way that he... differentiates with everybody that you're kind of like you're our official professor, person with the advanced education in what you talk about. Not to say that other people, you know, Eleanor Clift as an example, that you're superior or inferior to them. It's just the way. It's just what you've done is for a living and what you still do, and where your and what your education was. So that's kind of what that was about. And I guess I can joke about it because it is kind of funny, but. In case anybody wonders, Ron, I know you and I wonder. That's the answer. And so,
well, I hadn't been aware of this, but I'm very interested. I'm glad you told me about it and the whole audience. Yeah.
So after that 8-minute spiel, we will move on. Of course, Ron, you never quite know what Scott is going to talk about. What do you think he's going to talk about when you and he man the microphones this tomorrow
I think
afternoon?
He's going to bring up maybe I shouldn't say this. I think he's going to bring up Hillary Clinton, how he's not convinced that she's not running, because I've already seen some articles saying she's sitting back, waiting for people to self-destruct and attack each other, and she doesn't need to enter all the primaries and caucuses. She might pass the deadline for getting into them, because there is a deadline, and come in late in the year when a lot of people have fallen by the wayside, and it's possible that will happen. I don't think it's going to succeed, but I think that might be right, and I imagine he will discuss that, and also the different people dropping out and coming in, I would assume. Yeah. But with Scott, you never know, but it's always so challenging, and I love his show.
Right. There, as I said, there are always two things that Scott asks you about when you get together. One is there anything you like about Donald? And as we talked about recently, there is now one thing you like about Donald, other than his very attractive wife. We both like her, but in terms of policy, we discussed what that was, and that related to the woman who joined ISIS wanting to reinstate her citizenship. I would personally tell her to take a hike, and you would also, and that's what Donald thinks. And so if Scott asks you that question, you can give an answer. Yes, here's an example, and this, I think, is an important issue, and hopefully he'll ask you that. But you never know with Scott. He's probably listening anyway and probably saying, well, I'm not going to ask Ron that because I don't want to. I don't want him to get the best of me. And he'll also ask you if you...
But I think he will ask about Hillary Clinton,
right.
I imagine.
Well, he always does, and... I mean, give her credit. She has no obligation to tell people what she's going to do. And a little bit of mystery, that certainly adds to the fun and the immediacy. So who knows? She said before she wasn't going to run, and I think she's going to. And I will more than likely vote for her if she does. But we shall find out. And that's all part of the...
Yeah, and she did run at the end and actually win this time. She would be like she would be compared to Richard Nixon, who lost and came back and won. You know, who would think that? Or Grover Cleveland, who lost and came back and won. So she could be compared to others if that happened. The thought is, oh, you lost, you're done. Not necessarily.
I mean, it's not a great analogy, Ron. It's kind of a weak analogy. And we'll get into something else we can talk about, which is a negative topic, but it's not a controversial. It's one we both agree greatly. Is many baseball players, Tony Perez is an example, who everybody, at least all of his fans, myself included, believe that he is Hall of Fame material, but he didn't win on the first time, but he eventually did get in. And I know it's not the same as running for president, but sometimes you got to pick yourself up and keep fighting. And just like Tony Perez,
talk about that since you brought up baseball. It's 50 years since the Miracle Mets of 1969, and this week I was totally shocked that Tom Seaver, Mr. Met, has dementia and is retiring from public life, and Bud Harrelson from the same team has Alzheimer's and has retired, will not be at the 50-year anniversary of the New York Mets World Series, and particularly with Tom Seaver, both of them, but particularly him, it's just so unbelievably stunning. He's exactly my age. He's a month older than me, and it's like, oh my God, it really hit me hard. It really did. It's such a shame.
That's our next topic, but yes, it will happen.
And I forecast what you were going to ask,
I mean, Baseball Hall of Fame and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a crock. I just can't believe some of the people that are in, some of the people that aren't in. I'm not even going to talk about it because it just aggravates me. But, you know, with baseball, I would agree, as would most people, Tony Perez is not Nolan Ryan or Babe Ruth. He's not a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he is a Hall of Famer. Yes, Johnny Bench and Babe Ruth and Nolan Ryan and Tom Seaver, they should all get in on the first try, as they are some of the greatest players in history. Tony Perez is not in that category, but he was a great player, played on great teams. He was a clutch hitter and a good guy, and he deserves to be in, but I would agree he should be in the third or the fourth try. And that's kind of how it went. And so that's where you have to go ahead and not get discouraged and keep plugging away, and you may eventually get what you want. And not a perfect analogy, but who knows what may happen with Hillary. Both Reagan and Nixon, well, Nixon initially was a very popular president, and of course we know what happened after that, but both Reagan and Nixon, as you know, Ron, ran unsuccessfully, and eventually they got in, and you never quite know. So I guess we'll save the Hillary question for the show, because more than likely Scott's going to ask you, and maybe he'll throw you a curve and offer a different perspective. So
yes,
we did touch on it earlier. We're both sad to hear about one of the greatest pitchers ever, who also played for the Reds and the White Sox and the Red Sox, Mr. Tom Seaver, known as a very classy person, a gentleman in all aspects of the game. He was also an excellent, excellent hitter. And I, as a purist, hate the DH rule, and I always give credit when pitcher, does the other things well, hitting, fielding, etc. And Seaver considered that to be part of his game, and he was quite good at it. Again, not unlike Tom Glavine and Greg Maddux, also some of the greatest pitchers of our generation. And we're very saddened to hear about the illness that Tom Seaver is suffering from. We wish him well. My sympathies to his family. It's devastating to think of someone, Ron, that I grew up watching first as a rival and then as a Reds pitcher. It's very sad. And let's hope that Tom Seaver keeps plugging away. He certainly is a fighter, and maybe we'll get some good news about the guy. But I would imagine, Ron, especially since you and he being almost the same age, that like me, you would rank Tom Seaver as one of your favorite baseball players of all time.
Absolutely. And I must say that at times my oldest son says, "Dad, at some point you should retire from teaching." And my thought after this is, no way. As long as I have a mind that I can still be active and get out and walk on campuses, I want to do it, because that's one thing I really am afraid of, the idea of course you can't control if it's going to happen, because it will happen. But I really fear dementia more than even being in a wheelchair, let's say. If I'm physically handicapped, that's one thing. But to lose your mind, it's a horrifying thought. And I just hope by being active writing and being on the radio and teaching and lecturing that I can hopefully avoid that. But of course, it may be ordained already in the genes. Who knows? That I have to admit.
I am in full agreement that working keeps people young. And again, Ron is someone who is much older than he comes across. And I maybe in some ways I'm like that too. So sometimes you're only as old as you feel. So let's get on to another person who has provided bad news, but I'll put a little bit of humor into it, as laughter is the best medicine. That would be Mr. Alex Trebek, one of the most legendary game show hosts.
Oh, my God, yes.
He is suffering from late stages of pancreatic cancer. We wish him well. What a legend. I guess.
Reid, the former majority leader, also has advanced pancreatic cancer. And yet Ruth Bader Ginsburg had it years ago and recovered.
Yeah, and President Carter, you don't know. And believe me, he's a fighter. And I don't know what to say, but it's very sad. I mean, on a lighter note, we've talked about, Ron, in your younger days, you looked like either a young Alex Trebek or a young Gabe Kaplan with kind of that 70s style hairdo.
Well, I think more Gabe Kaplan, but that's funny. I consider that a very nice thing to say, that I look like Alex Trebek.
Yeah, but you look at originally Alex Trebek kind of had the dark hair, the big hair, the 70s, 80s style hair, and the thick mustache.
Yes.
And there's a bit of a resemblance. I think Gabe Kaplan is a spitting image of Ron from back in the 70s. If you just take a look, they look almost identical. And also playing a teacher.
And Welcome Back, Carter, the series. That's what's funny about it.
And playing a teacher. But, Alex Trebek, certainly there was some resemblance. And, on a lighter note, but very sad. I mean, Jeopardy, my stepmother, she still watches it every day. And ever since the Rod Fleming, I think that's the previous host. Ever since those days of Jeopardy, I have been a faithful follower, and I idolize Alex Trebek as someone in the broadcasting business. He began, I believe, as a news anchor, reporter. A wonderful voice and presentation, and so intelligent. The way he pronounces everything properly, he is the intellectuals game show host. And in his 70s, he still is, and I just wish him well. I was very saddened by that and Tom Seaver, and very, very sad, to hear that. And I wish both of these fine men well. I grew up with both of them, and I'm just very saddened. And let's hope that their health improves, and maybe they become healthier. I don't know. With Alzheimer's, there's no cure, but there's some very smart scientists out there working on a cure. And
yeah, also, I got to point out two fairly young actors, 52, each of them. Luke Perry, died of a stroke, my God. And Christoph St. John of The Young and the Restless soap opera died at age 52 also. It's just stunning when people are dying at an age like that, and both the same age. And, both not movie stars, more TV stars, but still, names people know.
Yeah. Right, and Luke Perry, Ron, is from our listening area. He's from Fredericktown, Ohio, which is on the fringe of our listening area. It's, again, less than an hour drive away. And a great actor. I don't know the guy. I'm sure there are people in our listening area who do, as he is from this area. He's one of the greatest actors ever from the Mid-Ohio area. And
yeah, I've read that a lot of people in their 40s and 50s can get strokes. I always thought of that as something an old person would get. But I guess everybody is always in danger of getting anything, I suppose. And yeah, some of it may be genetic, and some of it may just be bad luck, you know.
And Luke Perry, yeah, said, and his look with those sideburns, I think, influenced a generation. And people kind of wanted to look like Luke Perry and wanted to be on Beverly Hills 90210. And it's very sad. And even in middle age, was an excellent actor. And I've...
And Christoph St. John was on The Young and the Restless since 1991. He won a lot of honors on television, you know, on daytime TV. He was a well-known actor, you know.
Right. I mean, sad news. And I again, I well wishes for Tom Seaver, for Alex Trebek, and very saddened by someone we consider local, Luke Perry, and a great actor. So sometimes news isn't good, but we try to inject some humor into it. You may have heard, Ron, that something else that this area is known for, the very popular movie A Shawshank Redemption, starring one of the greatest voices of all time, Morgan Freeman, obviously.
Yes.
They are having
been declared dead many times, but he isn't.
Yeah, they're having a 25-year reunion. It was filmed in Mansfield and other cities that are in or near our listening area. And so that's a positive note. That's a movie I've seen multiple times. So Tim Robbins and Morgan Freeman, just two outstanding actors, and many great.
And Morgan Freeman's been declared to be God, in, you know, in the movies. And I think if you believe in God, I hope it's a Morgan Freeman kind of God.
Yeah, Morgan. What? Just that voice. My goodness. I remember. You've probably seen this Facebook question, Ron, that asks, if there's anybody who could narrate your life story, whom would you pick? But you're not allowed to pick Morgan Freeman because he has such a great voice. So whom would you pick? I don't know. Maybe Walter Cronkite. I don't know whom I would pick, but Morgan Freeman.
Well,
I think,
know something? When you said Walter Cronkite, I was jokingly going to say Scott Spears, because you talk about him being the person who interviews the stars. I, in a way, think on a local level that Scott Spears is almost like a Walter Cronkite. How's that?
Very similar, yes. Certainly some possibilities there. And that's quite a compliment to be compared to.
Going to the national stage.
Yeah, to be compared to.
If he ever wanted to leave the area.
Right, to such a legend. So I'm sure Scott would appreciate that. So, like always happens, Ron, we go off on tangents, but we talk about important things, and our show is almost going to conclude, but we're going to save the last 2 minutes.
We have so much fun, though, don't we?
Oh, yeah. We're going to save the last 2 minutes to talk about something you wrote in your blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, and that is that Sherrod Brown, another Ohioan, has claimed he's not going to run for president and that the Midwestern candidate could be Amy Klobuchar. Personally, I don't believe Sherrod Brown. He kind of flip-flops. But just like Hillary, I don't fault him for that because it's good to have a little aura of mystery. So in the 1 or 2 minutes left, Ron, any thoughts about that, about Sherrod Brown claiming that he doesn't want to be president and about Amy Klobuchar possibly running as that Midwestern candidate?
Well, I think it helps her, certainly, and I think she comes across among the women running as the most moderate centrist of the five, including Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii, the congresswoman, and Warren, and also Gillibrand, and also Harris. And I think she could be, if Joe Biden falters, and we don't know, she could be the possible candidate, and I think a ticket of her with Julian Castro would be a great ticket, a Midwesterner and a person from Texas, with the possibility now, after Beto O'Rourke, of possibly Texas going purple, meaning going to the Democrats, and that would be quite a ticket with a white woman and an Hispanic male, as a ticket. It would really deal with two issues at once, the issue of Latinos and Hispanic Americans, and also a woman. I think it could be a possible ticket. I would put her as the candidate at age 60, she would be, and he is as the running mate at age 46, as he will be. But I've also written on the fact that he himself could be a serious candidate, and his brother's a big star in the House, Joaquin Castro, and they're, of course, identical twins. So I think the Castro brothers are really big-time political stars, as I said, on March 9th. And I said, Amy, I think, should be paid more attention to now, I said, on March 10th.
Well, yesterday. We shall find out. The last time we had a Minnesotan and a person from the South, considering Texas to be the South, of course, we had Carter and Mondale, and they won. So maybe if we flip it around and have a Minnesotan and a female Minnesotan as president and a person from the general area of the South as a vice president, maybe they will also end up victorious. Well, that's all for today, Ron. Thank you again for joining us, and Again,
thanks,
you'll
so
be
much
on
again
with
for inviting me.
Scott Speer is the interviewer to the stars, who will call you Dr. Feynman in about 12, 13 minutes.
I look forward to talking to Scott. Yeah.
After one tomorrow, be there or be square, and have a great rest of your day. Thanks for joining us on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio.